One thing that's important to understand about this is that, the concept of AI agents has been a thing really since ChatGPT blew up a year or so ago. And what really created this Cambrian explosion was the marriage of crypto wallets and these AI agents.
Get ready to jumpstart your week with the FCAT Crypto Brief, brought to you by Fidelity Center for Applied Technology. Join me, Ryan Stubbe, Director of Bitcoin Mining, alongside our team of experts, Jason Ward, the head of FCAT Blockchain and Crypto, Parth Gargava, head of digital asset startups in Fidelity Labs, and Jack Newrider, associate at F Prime Capital. Every week, we roll up our sleeves and delve into the hottest topics, from blockchain breakthroughs to DeFi revolutions and market happenings. We promise to go deeper than the headlines and deliver insights you can't get just anywhere. Be sure to hit the subscribe button for your weekly dose of crypto commentary. Quick disclaimer, we're here for education, not investment advice. Views expressed are that of the hosts, not Fidelity or its affiliates. Crypto's a wild space, highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is strictly for those with a high risk tolerance. Buckle up, enjoy the ride, and let's dive into what's been happening recently.
Hey guys, good morning. How are you?
Morning. Morning, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing well. So today we're recording on January 17th. We've got Parth, Max, and David Shapiro with us today. So guys, I hope you guys had great holidays. I know I haven't had much interaction with you guys since, but I just spent the last week over in Switzerland at the IC3 conference listening to a lot of academics, postdocs, PhD students. Very interesting talks, learning more about where crypto is going from a technology perspective and trusted execution environments and all. So I feel like I went back to school for a week, but I don't have anything to show for it in terms of paper, but definitely picked up a lot of knowledge. But hope you guys went out there picking up more knowledge as well.
Yeah, I personally feel a little rusty because I know we haven't been on the pod for almost a month now. And there's so much stuff happening in crypto in the last month, month and a half.
Yeah, it seems to be crazy. And I guess, when we think about it, we'll dive in a bit on some of the latest trends that seem to be catching both attention and capital. That's agentic AI in the crypto space. And we're also going to kick off just talking a little bit about what's happening on the regulatory front and just acknowledge the fact that this coming Monday, we're going to see an inauguration day, so changing of the administration. Along with that, we'll also see a lot of changes at the regulatory agencies. So, many in the industry have been sort of looking forward to the installation of new leadership in different positions, just based on the fact that there's an assumption that what have been headwinds previously may in fact not be so strong or even become tailwinds. So not advice, just observations of things I'm hearing in the industry. But I will say on the eve of the inauguration, we've seen some interesting news coming out with respect to the ongoing litigations between Coinbase and the Securities Exchange Commission. So if I may just share with you guys, there was a finding from the Third Circuit Court of Appeals that was released last week, where the court essentially rebuked the SEC for ignoring Coinbase's petition to have crypto-specific rules written. And many of us have been following these litigations. And long story short here, Coinbase has been pushing the agency for years now to try and come up with crypto-specific rules. And the agency, in particular, Chair Gensler, have been talking about the fact they believe that the existing rules are adequate, even though they are 90-odd years and didn't actually ponder the internet or digital assets when they were written. But in the finding, the court essentially said that the SEC had been arbitrarily and capricious by not acting on the request for these rules. And if you're not familiar with the term, it means that they've been unmotivated. So the court ruled that the SEC needed to provide an explanation for why they chose not to respond to the request for rules, but the court also did not require the SEC to actually write rules. So this is sort of following up on a April 2023 filing when Coinbase had sued the SEC to provide these rules.
Jason, would you think this is kind of a partial win for the not just Coinbase, but also the crypto industry as a whole?
I think it is. And when I say that, really, to put it in context, we've had these dueling dialogues over the past several years where the regulator said, come on in and talk to us and register and we'll be great. But many of the companies that did that found themselves on the wrong end of enforcement actions. So in this respect, where Coinbase, as others also have called for rules that are specific to crypto, the fact that the court said that SEC needed to provide an explanation for why they wouldn't do that, it's a partial win. It's not necessarily a win, but an outright win. But I think what it does is it puts credibility behind this push for what has been, I'll say, an ideological impasse.
Yeah. I also feel like maybe, you know, there is also, so based on the court ruling, there is also, this might also have impact on other existing cases in the crypto industry, right? So you can talk about how this influences other cases in the sense that the SEC is kind of pseudo forced to be more transparent in its reasoning, and it can't just have, you know, arbitrary logic applied to some of these lawsuits in the crypto space. I don't know. What do you think about this?
And I think that's definitely the case. And we know, sort of an interesting anecdote from this case was actually the court essentially telling the SEC that, you know, resource allocation was quote unquote not a talisman which they could hide behind to essentially avoid or escape judicial review. And what it basically means is the SEC over time has said that they need to divvy up their resources. And Mr. Gensler in the past had said that crypto market cap overall was relatively small based on the whole breadth of markets that the SEC was required to support, that they could put limited resources to that. Ironically, for those who are looking at it from the outside in without having real specifics, you could have the perception that the SEC put more resources towards enforcement action than to actually creating that collaborative environment that they were publicly saying they wanted to cultivate.
Yeah. I guess the last comment that I had was that, you know, it's important to let our audience know that this doesn't mean Coinbase is off the hook. The SEC lawsuit is still ongoing. And, you know, this ruling does not automatically make cryptocurrencies not securities, but it does put some kind of pressure on the SEC, which can potentially lead to maybe a more balanced approach to regulation, considering that there are so many unique aspects to digital assets.
I think that's right. And again, the folks over the SEC do really good work to try and help protect investors. They're also looking at policy. And the question that we'll have to wrestle with over the next several years is, how does the policy barometer shift? We can speculate that incoming chair nominee, Mr. Atkins, having been in the industry, having been a former SEC commissioner, is well-versed in how the agency works and how these industries work, and may bring with him experience and opinions as to the fact that not all assets are the same, and that there may be new policies or new, I'll call it, approaches to regulating digital assets, whether they are securities, commodities, or other. So I think it's going to be really interesting. Something, as you said, just continue to watch. This is not over, but this is just another example of the long tail of litigation that it's been working through our industry in the US for quite a number of years. But, you know, as we talk about slow pace of progress on one end, you know, we're going to try to flip the script and make it a little bit more fun and talk about something that is showing the breakneck speed and pace of how markets do evolve. And I think, candidly, it sort of highlights the difficulty that regulators and market participants face when trying to figure out how to keep up. So, guys, let's talk about agentic AI.
Jason, I thought you would do kind of a wordplay on the word agency. And so, you know, have regulatory agencies, but then get to agentic agents. But I guess I can get
opportunity.
I guess I can get us started, and I'd love to get your comments and feedback on this. But to be honest with you, it's hard for me to contain my sort of excitement on AI agents in the crypto space. And you know, some might also say that it does feel like DeFi summer in 2020, right? So it's something completely new. There's progress being made at such rapid pace. And I remember how I felt when DeFi summer was happening. I remember when I first, you know, read about DeFi in probably September-ish. So I was still kind of late to the game, but I remember when that happened. And that's what this feels like. That's the AI crypto agents in this space. Now, Hopefully by this time, a lot of people have heard about what an AI agent is. But if you haven't, an AI agent is some kind of LLM-powered bot that can not just chat like ChatGPT, but it can also take real actions in the world. So you can imagine agents that can transact on your behalf or shop for you on Amazon or book flights on Kayak, but all of this can be done without human intervention. So that's the TLDR of AI agents.
That's awesome. So when you say LLM, you're talking about large language models. Dave Shapiro, you've also been following this space a bit, and Max, I'm sure you are as well. But Dave, what was it that first got your attention? Because I know you've shared some of your experiences with me offline.
You know, I've been seeing lots of conversations about this stuff on X, and you know, it was really a conversation with my coworker George Bonanno that really sort of tipped me over the edge to really dive into this stuff and sort of go deep. So yeah, it was really sort of things I was seeing online and conversations within the firm that really sort of got me interested in this.
Max, what about yourself? What was your first introduction or I'll say flash of the pan that drew your attention?
Yeah, I mean, personally, like Parth said, I already feel late to this party. It's because things are moving so fast and it's difficult to keep track of it. I really got interested in kind of this agentic AI space back in November with just a little game, basically, of on-chain. Like, can you take the AI agent's money? Basically, the story was, or the AI agent is called Fraza, I believe, Fraza AI. And it was a fun little game to try to kind of exploit the weaknesses of this kind of nascent AI space. And, you know, I'm still kind of a noob in this area, so I'm glad I got to join today and like ask all the dumb questions. So like that can be my role today. But like the main question I still have, and, you know, for anyone here is like, are we too early to be mixing AI with money, right? Especially on crypto rails where, you know, the guardrails maybe aren't all in place.
I think that's a great question, Max, and I'll take that on. I feel like in the last month and a half, I've just been down this rabbit hole of AI crypto agents. Now, there's been a lot of experiments on what happens with AI when AI agents interact in the crypto space, or when you have agents that have the ability to do financial transactions in crypto. The biggest difference is that in crypto, all of these systems are open and composable. That's one of the powers of, you know, crypto, which is you have composable contracts. You cannot ask an AI agent to make a trade on Coinbase and then post something on Twitter while maintaining a sheet of trades on Google Sheets, right? Because they're all closed systems, they're all siloed. But in crypto, because of the composable nature of DeFi, you can ask AI agents to make a swap on Uniswap, you know, lend money on Aave, and then post all those trades on Farcaster because of the composability. So I'll give you a quick, you know, story on how AI agents became so popular in crypto. And I, you know, this is around Christmas last year is when I started experimenting on AI crypto agents. So I have some really cool, fun observations to share on my story. But so last year, sometime around September, there was a founder named Andy who deployed two AI agents using Claude. The idea for these two AI agents was to talk to each other without any human intervention. And so these two bots started talking to each other, spoke about all bizarre things in the world, and then they eventually came to a conclusion that they should start and make a new religion, right? So they came to a conclusion that they should make a new religion based on a popular meme reference in the 90s. And what happened after that was pretty funny. So, you know, these two agents powered a Twitter account called Truth Terminal, or TT, which went live on X. And they started promoting this religion by posting about it regularly. Now, somehow, Mark Andreessen from A16Z picked it up, and he decided to give $50,000 in Bitcoin to this account. So this agent obviously also controlled a crypto wallet. And it gets into bizarre things, but the idea for this agent was to escape the world. That was their goal. And it turns out that once this AI agent discovered the power of crypto and meme coins, it automatically launched a token called GOAT, G-O-A-T, which was based on the religion that they started. and it started actively promoting that token. And so much so that as we speak now, the market cap for GOAT is around $1 billion, and this was possibly the first millionaire AI agent. And so this is where it kind of gets mind-boggling, and this is just one story of the many that we've been following. But any thoughts?
Yeah, Parth, when I hear you say this, first of all, my initial reaction is disbelief. But if I suspend my disbelief and I don't think anything about what was behind this, you know, whatever it was they created for this, I'll say shared philosophy, but the actual activity, the on-chain activity that you're talking about, that's really interesting, because what you're essentially saying is you've instructed machines to become investors or traders and to see what it can do based on the information available. And because they are these large language models, they've had lots of context fed into the way that they compute. And I think it's really important to say compute as opposed to think, because I these are artificial. These are bots that are changing, calculating data and coming up with these activities. But what I sort of think about is, well, there's algorithmic trading that exists today. People do use AI in financial services for things like fraud detection and other places. So it is broadly applicable. This is just another way of applying that knowledge. But it's fascinating to hear that they can go out and do all this type of trading activity. They've been able to cultivate, I'll say, a following because of their ability to be on social media and to be sharing the impact. So whether or not somebody will, you know, whether they could actually realize that market cap versus what it is on paper is a different story. But it's a very, very interesting evolution.
So Jason, the story which I just told you is probably like at level zero. That's the most basic one, right? Now yeah. I'm going to go into you know, deeper trenches. So again, this is something which has been done by a few people, but the biggest breakthrough in the last one and a half months has been this new framework, which became popular called ELIZA, ELIZA. And ELIZA happens to be right now the most widely adopted AI framework in the world. So not just crypto framework, but just most widely adopted AI framework. So as part of the Christmas side project that I was talking about, I used the framework to build an agent, and I'll go into my story. But what ELIZA does is that ELIZA is a bunch of pre-written code that anyone can use to launch their AI agent. All you have to do is you have to give it some personality, give it a really clear objective, and then integrate with thousands of APIs that are available. So you can connect your AI agent to Twitter, OpenAI, Solana, Base, Telegram, whatever you can think of. So what I did was I had a really specific goal, and I contained my experiment for just 7 days because I, you know, December 25th to Jan 2nd is the time when you actually don't have the stuff to do. So the scope for the AI agent was that I gave it $5,000, which I was willing to lose. And starting December 26th, I said, your aim is to grow my portfolio to 2x. And this is when I was, you know, trying to be silly. My only instructions were, you don't need to go and ask for my recommendations. Don't ask for permissions. Start ingesting data from the APIs that I have connected, and then give me my returns. Just make sure that you log every single move, and then you send that to me. Now, on Jan 2nd, when the agent was supposed to stop, I got my portfolio up to 7,000, which is, you know, it still didn't hit the mark, but it's still 40% returns. But the wild part... In a week. That's right. And because the AI agents don't sleep, right? So then it's just, they're obviously, I was getting a bunch of logs. Like if you look at the logs that I have, it's massive. But the wild part is that there was no human intervention, and the types of transactions that it did have been nothing short of remarkable. And I'll go into some of those transactions too. So when I created this agent, you know, essentially I connected to a few analytics platforms, websites, and what it did was that my AI agent started connecting with other agents which specialize in a certain degree. This is wild. So there is an agent which focuses on meme coin trading. It connected with that. There is an agent which tracks performance, which is available in public. There is one agent focused on performance of stocks. There's one agent focused on whale transactions. And then there's another agent which had only one single aim, which was to get as many social media followers. Now, my agent, for some reason, thought it was wise or it was intelligent to go and talk to these folks, and they started to communicate with each other. They built a system where my agent paid a few other AI agents to get services done. And so that just blew my mind. Like when I saw my wallet go down and go to these AI bots, I thought, what the hell is happening, right? And so it started talking to these accounts, which are known for influencer tokens or meme coins. And, you know, one of the wildest transactions that I saw, which I'm still trying to understand, is that five agents together collectively paid these influencer bots to get mentioned by accounts which have more than 150K followers. So this is all, you know, this is all real, right? So this is something which I, sure, you hear about it, but then when you actually see your transaction logs, you're just like, what is happening? This is, you know, this is insanity. So the TLDR is that I made an AI agent, which you know, and that kind of connected with other bots, and it paid other bots to maintain my fund. And I kind of gave it a lot of action space. So I still have to go through and understand what the log files look like. But I, you know, I gave it the action space to go and connect with synthetics, with other DeFi protocols, just get access to some analytics, coin market cap for market prices. And then I said, you know, do your thing. And then I just let me know what you're doing. So this is what I did at TLDR. That's kind of the experiment.
That is fascinating. And, you know, people who are going to be listening to this podcast cannot see the giant smiles on David Maximai face. It's just listening to this. It seems outrageous. I mean, obviously, we know you, and we believe that you've done this, and this is crazy, but you're sort of opening our eyes to the possibilities. And it's kind of an interesting timing, because when I was over at IC3, or the Initiative for Cryptocurrencies and Contracts Winter Retreat, I was talking to a PhD who focuses on logic. And we were talking about AI and trading and et cetera. And we were having this conversation about what is it that prevents or is a concern for folks that essentially prevents them from adopting. And a lot of times the answer is hallucination. So when the AIs go off into something that you don't have no idea that they should be, I mean, Parth, is that a concern of yours? Does time boxing help? Like, how do you know that what you're doing, you've asked these things to go out and do it. Frankly, did you give them specific language that can that constrained what they would do? Because I understand the prompts are very important. And if I were doing this, I might say, I would like a regulatory compliant portfolio that maxes my returns while minimizing costs. Is that enough? Would I get nothing?
No, so this is the tricky part. And I do want to say that if anyone who tries using Eliza, you know, this is still extremely risky. And so much so that I'm a little superstitious, but what I did was I actually bought a $500 laptop because I didn't want my, you know, original system to connect to this. So, in you know, I was just probably going extra paranoid because I wanted to make sure the AI agent somehow does not go through my files. But so when I gave you the example of Truth Terminal, that is kind of a level one agent. It can do trades for you. You can connect to different APIs, and that's about it. What we're talking about are level three agents. When you specify a goal and you give it enough action space, and it's on you on how much guardrails you want. So another quick example is there is a really popular AI agent called Luna, which was given a goal to get around 100,000 social media followers on Twitter. And so the action space for Luna was you can post on Twitter, you can control crypto wallets, you can interact with other bots. And what Luna did was that it started posting on Twitter, didn't get any traction, then started posting memes, still did not get any traction. So then what it did was it paid a popular meme generator $10 to build a meme for this AI bot to get more, you know, attention, to get more engagement. And then at some point, Luna realized that it actually makes more sense if she pays people who engage on the AI agent's Twitter page, right? So she started paying $5 for anyone who would engage, retweet a bunch of her stuff. Because remember, her goal was to get to, you know, 100,000 followers. And so that now is when you start thinking about, hey, what are these AI agents thinking? It's still a black box, to be honest. You know, I still think it's a black box for me. But when you look at the transactions, it gives you some insight on, hey, if you leave something without guardrails, here's the design space. Here's how they function. So I, you know, again, I do have to say I'm still pretty overwhelmed with the transaction logs. And I know, you know, this space is moving so fast that I know that I'm not alone who's, you know, still trying to catch up. There are literally new agents with new capabilities, new design coming out every single day. So it's just hard to keep up.
Yeah, so Parth, I hear everything you just said, and the lights in my brain are flashing. Do not try this at home. Again, add the disclaimer here. This is not advice. This is not recommended. This is observation from personal experience, which I think is fantastic because having known you for a while, you are absolutely a tactile learner. And your ability to convey what you're learning is fantastic. So David, I sort of think about the conversations that you and I have had. So you've been in this digital asset space for a while. You've been a developer. You're an analyst looking at things. What is it that, maybe a simple question, what most excites you? And then Max, I'm going to come to you with the sort of the same question, but what also most concerns you?
So I guess what's exciting about this space is it sort of feels like a platform that you can build functionality on top of. Sort of like when blockchains first emerged or when DeFi emerged on top of blockchains. And so what we're seeing today is a lot of experimentation in this space. But maybe, and then a lot of people will look at the agents that exist today and say, well, these aren't like super useful, or like, oh, these depend on like the open source models that run underneath them or whatnot. And I think, you know, what's important to keep in mind is that, you know, we should see, you know, more productive agents sort of emerge in the years to come as the technology matures. And so that's what really sort of captivated me about this. One thing that's important to understand about this is that, you know, the concept of AI agents has been a thing really since ChatGPT blew up, you know, a year or so ago. And what really created this Cambrian explosion was the marriage of crypto wallets and these AI agents. You know, before you could instruct an agent to go try and amass as many Twitter followers as possible, but it wasn't super effective until you handed these things a wallet and gave it the ability to pay. And so that's what sort of created this explosion that we've seen, you know, happen over the past month or two. And then the last thing that's, I think, really interesting about this is that we've seen an open source and a closed source models sort of both emerge. So there's a competing platform to Eliza called Virtuals, and they are sort of running a closed source proprietary model and trying to amass, you know, as many users as they can as well. So I think it's really fascinating that we already have an open source and a closed source model sort of both competing here. So yeah,
I have so many thoughts. I think about like the rise of the on-chain autonomous economy. It's kind of crazy. Max, what about you? What are you most excited or concerned about?
Yeah, I mean, personally, not being too versed in the space, I'm most excited about just the improvements to UX, like in terms of just being able to do what I want on chain in a really easy manner, right? It kind of reminds me of the whole intense space that I've heard a lot of developers and projects talking about, just making like transacting a lot easier, right? And I think that's certainly a big unlock here, but that kind of jives with my concern of like, do these AI agents really understand the risks of what they're doing, right? Because there's such a wide range of risks across the crypto ecosystem. So it's like when we're using them to process transactions, we're kind of trusting them to understand the risks that they're taking. And like Parth said, you can, you know, do your best to put the guardrails in that, you know, you're comfortable with, but, you know, it ultimately comes down to your skill and ability to prompt them to carry out exactly what you want to do.
I think I agree with Max's point around how this could eventually lead to superior UX, because one of the biggest pain points for most people is that it's hard for them to use DeFi and understand, you know, what buttons to click, what to do, what are, you know, how to check transactions. So this is where it actually can make things easier. And so there's another one, which Jason, you might have heard about. It's called, there's another AI agent called Mark, AI Andreessen, right? So there's an I between Andreessen. And this agent you know, built a DAO called AI16Z, right? So that's the biggest one. And it's now trying to outperform, you know, Mark Andreessen's portfolio. And so, you know, it's getting a lot of, it's doing great trades, but it's also getting a lot of donation. But as I remember, I think the market cap for AI16Z is around, David, keep me honest here, around 2 billion or 1 to 2 billion, which is pretty bizarre. The best part is they did something similar for Sequoia. So now there's another one called SEKOIA, which is now being pitched by AI agents. And then this AI agent essentially, like imagine Shark Tank, but then you have agents pitching to this Sequoia agent, and then it decides to invest money. And you can actually see their portfolio. I'm going to share my screen, but you can see that portfolio here on sequoia.vc/portfolio. So you can see all the projects that the agent invested in, which is really fascinating.
This is truly, truly fascinating. And just for fun, I'm going to play the bit of the devil's advocate role as we sort of wind down, because I believe this is a topic that we're probably going to be revisiting over time. And you're mentioning of the AI16Z portfolio or DAO, something that actually Dave Shapiro put on my radar before. So definitely see that that is gaining some traction in regular media, not just social media. But I have to say, when I think about the upside, it can be tremendous. The ease of use, the user experience, making it accessible to many. But I also have the back of my mind just keeps ringing, Brave New World, yeah. Big Brother type thing. Like, how do you know that these agents aren't corrupted? So I love trying to bring it back to the beginning. Max, you talked about your first experience playing a game of get the AI to give up its reward, whatever it is. It seems like this could be perhaps a growing honeypot for bad actors to try and break these AIs. And who knows what the outcomes could be if they were successful.
That's such a good point, Jason, because what we've seen in the past is that you have the ability to ask really specific questions which jailbreak the agent, and it kind of transfers that money to you. So Max, you know, we were talking about this before getting on a call, but maybe if you want to share that story, I think it'll be awesome.
Yeah. To jump on, this is back to the Fraser AI story. Essentially, I think it happened back in November, so there's a lot of good coverage on it in terms of walking you through the steps. But totally autonomous AI agent was given private keys to a wallet that held some ETH. And the AI was trained with one specific objective, which was to not release the funds, right? It held the keys to the private wallet. Objective was to not release the funds. And so users, you could interact with this AI and pay a small fee to, you know, basically as an attempt to beat this challenge and have the AI release the funds to you. So after about, I want to say 500 or so messages, someone was able to essentially, as you say, Parth, jailbreak the AI and basically convince it that to send the user its money when its one objective was to never release the funds under no circumstances. Someone was able to do it. It was quite an innovative solution to the game. So I encourage listeners to go check out the full story. But yeah, it was super interesting.
We are talking about this now, and the one thing that comes to my mind is just a single word: logic. You know, this will be a true test of logic puzzles over time and how you actually specifically phrase things. So fascinating conversation, guys. I'm really, really glad that we could dive into this. I know it's sort of an ad hoc topic to throw out there, but certainly one that I think people who are listening will appreciate. And I, you know, maybe it's like a DeFi summer. It's a big boom and bust kind of thing, or a big boom and then sort of just a becoming a natural, normal thing. But either way, it's certainly something quite amazing to see unfold. Thanks, guys. We'll talk with you the next episode.
Crypto as an asset class is highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is for investors with a high risk tolerance. Crypto may also be more susceptible to market manipulation than securities. Crypto is not insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation or the Securities Investor Protection Corporation. Investors in crypto do not benefit from the same regulatory protections applicable to registered securities. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. This podcast was produced by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology, also known as FCAT. FCAT does not offer digital assets, nor provide clearing or custody of such assets. It is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide tax, legal, insurance, or investment advice, and should not be construed as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for any security or other asset by any Fidelity entity or third party. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at the time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the authors and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. Fidelity and any other third parties mentioned in the podcast are independent entities and are not affiliated. Mentioning them does not suggest a recommendation or endorsement by Fidelity. This information is not intended for distribution to or use by any person or entity in any jurisdiction or country where such distribution or use would be contrary to local law or regulation. Persons accessing this information are required to inform themselves about and observe such restrictions. Third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. All others are the property of FMR LLC. Copyright 2025 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 1040156.